Human rights groups have slammed these initiatives as mere attempts to reshape the kingdom's image through expensive PR campaigns presenting Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman as a reformer.
The Crown has spent billions of dollars hosting major political, entertainment, cultural and sporting events as a deliberate strategy to deflect from the country's image as a pervasive human rights violator, to whitewash its dismal rights record.
Saudi Arabia is using the G20 meeting in Riyadh to build legitimacy. Bear in mind that bin Salman is behind the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi and the Yemen war. The kingdom is cashing in on Donald Trump's staunch support all along the way.
Saudi Arabia is the first Arab nation to host the G20 summit, the meeting of the leaders of the world's most industrialized countries and emerging economies will be held on November 21st and 22nd, Max Civili, Rome.
A high-level conference focusing on the EU's treatment of refugees has just concluded in the European Parliament, Brussels. During the event, the 27-nation bloc's migration and asylum policy was slated. It appears a new crisis is emerging at sea as desperate African refugees try to reach EU territory.
Look what is already happening in the Atlantic. Hundreds of people are trying to reach the Canary Islands. Through the Atlantic, one of the most perilous routes in the world, they are dying there.
The EU unveiled a new asylum policy in September, but critics say the focus is on closing the bloc's borders instead of respecting international law and upholding the EU's much trumpeted values.
Our staff has spoken out against policies which are directly responsible for this unimaginable human suffering. Time and again, European nations and institutions have failed to act on their duty.
Many organizations insist the EU should be viewing immigration as an opportunity rather than a threat.
Behind all those people, there are hidden skills. We need to identify those skills and to use those skills in our European labor market.
The EU is paying billions of euro to Turkey and several African nations to try and prevent refugees from traveling. During the Brussels event, Ankara was accused of using the refugee crisis to advance geopolitical goals.
It is wrong to endorse the popular view of Turkey as a victim of the war in Syria. Turkey is on war in Syria since its very last start.
However, Ankara is highly critical of the European Union over its handling of the problem. Refugees continue to die in the Mediterranean. Those who make it are held in very poor conditions on Greek islands and now Spanish islands too.
Perhaps the most compelling argument being made by rights groups for the EU to do more is because the West has fueled so much conflict in the Middle East and Africa, effectively playing a big role in helping to create the refugee crisis. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
There are claims of discrimination at this school that highlighted the entrenched racism which resides in the broader community here. Among the accounts, children of colour were described with highly derogatory terms by teachers and fellow learners, were excluded from certain activities. And when this was protested, white individuals from the area violently attacked those raising concerns. Protesters say by perpetuating this attitude, which is reminiscent of the apartheid years, youth born under South Africa's democracy are still being taught old racial tendencies.
That we are against the racism. We are not against the white people. You must be correct with that. We are not against with white people. They are humans like us. But the way they treat us, it's like we are not humans.
But today, as before, the police were clearly set to protect the white community, blocking all efforts by the protesters to make progress. Demonstrators point to a broader issue with how the government continues to target the vulnerable.
It was just a peaceful protest because no one did anything to harm the police. We were just peacefully and then raising our voices that enough is enough. So they started to do this thing because we are black.
This is an illusion of democracy that we are getting. It's just a democracy that we have received just only to vote. But in terms of freedom, we are not free.
scenes of a riot that we have witnessed here in this area today. Stun grenades, rubber bullets, as well as water cannons used to disperse the crowd. And so they were prevented from handing over their memorandum of demands, which of course was against racism within this area. At this point, there appears little effort by authorities to make a move against racism here. The Provincial Education Department has rejected calls by the South African Human Rights Commission for a probe or any action against teachers accused of racism. The opposition left-leaning economic freedom fighters, which has led these protests, say it is this attitude that will only ensure they continue with their protests. Hassan Siriop, Cape Town.
Both mainstream parties in the United States have been profoundly shaken by the election results from November 3rd. While the Democrats may prevail in the still-disputed presidential election, their so-called blue wave has been universally described as an abject disaster. Despite unprecedented mainstream media support, widespread leftist-based protests, and record fundraising, they failed to retake the Senate, lost seats in the House, lost one governorship, and failed to flip a single state legislature. Because this is a census year, Republicans will control drawing up most of the decade's new electoral maps, causing many to say the election was a disastrous setback for progressive causes.
70% of Republicans, 90% of Democratic voters are for Medicare for All. They're for the ending of student debt. They're for a UBI to sustain them, especially during COVID. So these things are very progressive, and the Democrats were against them.
Massive infighting among the party elite is being reported. Older and moderate Democrats blame newly popular progressive causes for the losses, but the Democratic Socialists of America, the left wing of the Democratic Party, won 70% of the races and ballot initiatives they endorsed.
The Democrats really aren't progressive. I would attribute their losses to putting up bad candidates, candidates that are very centrist. So this is the strategy of the Democrats, is we need to be more centrist or more rightist centrist, and they'll blame progressives.
The election results were widely expected to be a repudiation of so-called Trumpism, but analysts say they actually cemented the unprecedented political uprising unexpectedly led by Donald Trump. So-called Trumpian Republicans are now expected to reshape the Conservative Party. There seems to be unanimous agreement that regardless of the final outcome of the presidential election, Trump and his family will have increased, not decreased, control over the Republican Party. A pre-election poll asked Republicans and Republican-leaning independents if they considered themselves a supporter of Trump or a supporter of the Republican Party. 60% picked Trump. Whichever presidential candidate is finally inaugurated, it seems certain that America has undergone a dramatic political shift, which few people predicted, and which many are struggling to understand and accept. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Sheikh Sasaki's trial continued in a Kaduna State High Court in northern Nigeria with the presentation of two prosecution witnesses. The two witnesses were officers of the Nigerian Army who made their presentations in court while journalists stay outside.
They gave evidence about the operation, of the military operation that lasted between the 12th and the 14th of December 2015, and the role played by each of them. We just want to see how far we can go tomorrow. The case would not, the prosecution is not likely to close the case tomorrow. So we then take other days so that we can speedily, have this matter concluded.
Sheikh Ibrahim Sasaki is being tried for culpable homicide, unlawful assembly, disruption of public peace, among other allegations, which the Islamic movement has described as fabricated and baseless. In December 2015, soldiers of the Nigerian Army attacked Sasaki's home and worship center, killing over 340 of his supporters. No soldier has been charged for the mass murders of Sasaki's supporters, despite the recommendation of a judicial commission of inquiry set up by the Kaduna state government. Sheikh Zazaki has been in detention for close to 5 years in violation of the ruling of a federal high court ordering for his release.
The Nigerian judiciary is a very independent judiciary. So by the grace of Allah, there is going to be a way out for Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki, in as much as the Nigerian judiciary remain independent. Definitely there is going to be a way out for Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki through the constitutional means.
Despite being a public trial, no journalist or any member of the Zazaki family has ever been allowed inside the courtroom. Meanwhile, Zazaki supporters have continued to demand for his release in accordance with the order of a federal high court in Abuja. Benjamin Abdullahi, Abuja.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on November 3rd, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference on the occasion of the birthday anniversaries of the Holy Prophet of Islam and Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq. Greetings be upon them. And which coincides this year with the National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance and Unity Week.
What kind of government is the French government? The same government offered the most help to a bloodthirsty wolf named Saddam. Of course, we cannot say that it offered more support than other governments. It was one of the main supporters of Saddam in that war. It provided that bloodthirsty wolf with advanced planes and advanced equipment, and they were not ashamed of doing it as they have acknowledged it. This is related to their behavior towards terrorists and the like. But you have also witnessed how they treated their people during the Saturday Yellow Vest demonstrations held last year. That is while they claim to be interested in freedom, human rights, and other such values. I believe that these are the two sides of the same coin. In other words, defending that act of cultural savagery and the criminal action taken by a cartoonist is one side of the coin, and the other is defending and helping the Munafiqeen and Saddam. These are the two sides of the same coin.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want or need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
Well, such courses of action have been repeatedly adopted in European countries and in the US. The incidents related to insulting the Holy Quran and the Holy Prophet have frequently occurred in Western countries, in both the US and European countries. But such incidents cannot damage the honor, magnificence, and greatness of the Holy Prophet of Islam in the slightest manner. It is completely clear that the enlightened personality of the Messenger of Mercy cannot be damaged with these actions. By Allah's favor, this sun shines more brightly on a daily basis. Just as the thugs in Mecca and Taif could not erase the name of the Holy Prophet of Islam despite all the efforts that they made, these excellencies will not be able to damage the Holy Prophet either. However, one can understand a point from this incident, that these courses of action show the dark nature of the Western civilization.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi, sir.
Hi, Kitty. Good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
The supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in thy party, for thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among thy friends, for thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Once again, Israel has bombarded the impoverished Gaza Strip. And once again, Tel Aviv says it was attacked first and then it retaliated. Certain facts that Israeli authorities always seem to conveniently forget, that since 2007, they have imprisoned the almost 2 million residents of Gaza, cutting them off from the world and controlling practically everything going into the Strip. And that, according to international law, the Geneva Convention, Palestinians have a right to defend themselves and fight against their colonizers. We'll be looking at this latest situation in the Gaza Strip on this debate. Stay with us.
Israel launched airstrikes in the early hours of Sunday on the Gaza Strip, causing damage to surrounding areas, but no casualties reported. Israel claims the airstrikes targeted Hamas positions and came in response to a rocket fired from Gaza toward the southern city of Ashkelon, the second time in 2 weeks.
Israel is not committed to its responsibilities, refusing to allow in the required ventilators for the enclave amid the coronavirus pandemic. The resistance front preserves the right to give a crushing response to those violations.
The Palestinian groups say they will continue their resistance as long as Israel is imposing its crippling blockade over the impoverished enclave, especially amid the coronavirus pandemic and the shortage of medical equipment and ventilators.
It is the resistance movement's duty to defend Palestinians against the Israeli aggression under any condition. Israel should be held accountable for the deterioration of the Palestinians' lives, This is a crime against Gazans.
Observers say Israel's refusal to meet the basic needs of Palestinians increases the possibility of further escalation.
The ongoing conflict comes as a result of Israel's suffocating siege on the Gaza Strip over the past 14 years. Palestinians won't remain silent. Through strikes like the recent ones, Israel is seeking to cover up its internal problems.
Israel has been conducting similar strikes on Gaza Strip over the past months.
The resistance groups here stress they are ready for any possible escalation, and the resistance will go on until the crippling siege on the Gaza Strip is broken. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
I'd like to welcome my guest to this program, Maxine Dover, journalist and commentator out of New York, and Nick Napier, Scottish-Palestine Solidarity Campaign, Edinburgh. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start it off with Maxine. Maxine, what do you think that Tel Aviv has chosen this time to attack Gaza?
I think the reverse is the condition. The first rockets came out of Gaza. Israel is responding, not attacking. And that should be very, very clear. I think that if the people of Gaza would look at the changes that have been effected in cooperation with the Palestinian Authority, which just this week has agreed to reestablish bilateral security arrangements, which has the benefit of access to Israeli medical facilities, which is living a much more normal life as far as employment, as far as resources availability. If the people of Gaza knew what was going on with their fellow Palestinians, they might be very, very prone to change that Hamas rule, which is using them as a shield for its own political desires.
Okay, Mick, let me get you in on this. Your thoughts of what you heard our guests say in New York.
Israel always retaliates. Israel never inflicts violence upon the people of Gaza because that's part of the plan of ethnic cleansing. You have to remember, if we wish to say which party inflicted the first blow and then who retaliated, the majority of the population of Gaza, subject to this crippling siege and boycott because they voted in a way that Israel disapproved of, the majority of people in Gaza are refugees from earlier waves of ethnic cleansing. A fact Ms. Dover may wish to ignore, may wish to sweep under the carpet. Refugees have a right to return. Those people who are violated have a right to resist. Not only that, decent people would say they have a duty to resist. If what has happened to the people of Palestine had happened to the people of Scotland or Lithuania or anywhere else in the world, they would resist. And ordinary people would say they would be right to resist. Nobody has a right to invade your home, your country, claiming to have a real estate deal with God from 2,000 years earlier, and use massive violence, murder, mayhem, mass incarceration, legalized torture. Nobody has a right to do that to any other people. That's what the Zionist project is doing to the Palestinians. But let's face it, they have a right and a duty to resist. What about people would resist in that situation?
Let me get Maxine back on that. What about that, Maxine? I mean, what about international law? What about the Geneva Convention?
Let's get our historical facts correct. The deal with God, to which my Scottish colleague refers, is not 2,000 years old. It's at least 6,000 years old from the beginning of any kind of policy.
That's ridiculous.
Let's have that straight. And there is a more current deal. It's called the Balfour Declaration. It was called the League of Nations and then the United Nations, which gave Israel its right to exist as a modern Jewish state. So let's get our history correct. With regard to what could be happening in Gaza and what is not under Hamas is just to take a look, and yes, there are political things that must be straightened out, and I, as you know, am a proponent of the two-state solution, but take a look at the difference in what is going on in the West Bank, which eventually will have a political settlement. And in the facts of people working together, people living together, people shopping in the same grocery stores, everyone enjoying the benefits of, before COVID, obviously, of a normal economy. I've been in the West Bank. I've been in Ramallah. I see what can happen when the people live together, when colleagues work together in the same factory, working on the same projects, whether it's a construction project or an electronics project. Hamas is the one putting the foot on the neck of the people of Gaza.
Okay.
And
Nick?
If the people of Gaza, if the people of Gaza are able to be informed, and many of them have been and are informed, but if the majority of the people begin to understand what they could do to change their own lives by getting a different ruling power, and it's not Israel that's the ruling power, it's Hamas. It's Hamas that makes the rockets fly.
Isn't Hamas that has that has laid siege? Is it Hamas that is controlling, not allowing anything basically inside? Is it Hamas that is not allowing free movement? It is Hamas that basically has done what everyone is saying in the world now has led to the largest outdoor prison in the world, Maxine.
Why has Egypt also taken the action of making sure that Hamas is as limited as any other country, this one, Egypt?
Well, you're changing the topic. The topic was Israel and Hamas. So we were talking about Israel and Hamas. But let me get Mick in on this. Mick, you know, Maxine, when she's describing the West Bank, when she's describing lifestyles of Palestinians elsewhere, and it actually sounds like utopia. It actually sounds like utopia. Mick, go ahead. Your comments.
Thank you. Well, they are working together. But, you know, black and white people used to work together in South Africa, but there was a white supremacist political system that they both had to accept. Palestinians and Jews do work together in factories where Palestinians are greatly inferior in terms of wages, health and safety conditions, and legal rights to Jews.
This is
And this is certainly the case. They work together, but there is a system of Jewish supremacy in the West Bank and in the whole of Palestine, where a Jew like Maxine, from the day she is born till the day she dies, has privileges over every Palestinian who lives there. This is indisputable. It's indisputable economically, politically, militarily. This is the reality. Look, let's bring this down. Palestinians in Gaza demonstrated for their right of return as enshrined in international law, as enshrined in many, many conventions. One Israeli sniper boasted in the Israeli media he had shattered 42 Palestinian knees of people, of young men, demonstrating at a distance from the sniper, posing no threat to the sniper. This is degenerate. This is sick beyond sick. And the Palestinians have a right to call upon support from decent people the world over faced with this. Look, Israel is occupying power. That's the United Nations position. Mr. Trump and Mr. Pompeo don't substitute for that. Therefore, they have a right, they have a duty of care to the people whom they have occupied and whom they blockade, a duty to provide education, health, decent supplies of food and clean water. Instead, we have the ridiculous, horrible situation that people around the world work hard to supply aid to the Palestinians whose conditions of life are being deliberately attrited, being deliberately reduced by the Israeli occupying power.
Okay.
Now, Maxine may say Israel's not occupying the center of towns in Gaza. It's the official occupying power. It's reducing the conditions of life of people there to misery. This is deliberate. Dov Weisglass, an advisor to Ariel Sharon, once joked that the Israelis were not out to cause famine in Gaza. They were only putting the Palestinians, quote unquote, on a diet. And the Israeli occupation forces specified the exact number of calories that they calculated Palestinians should be allowed.
Okay.
This is
let me get Maxine back in on this,
and
Mick.
Anyone who defends it needs
Mick,
to look
stay
at the
with
ethical
me.
System.
Stay with me. Let me get Maxine back in on this. Now, Maxine, Gaza has been under siege for years now. I want to look at, especially with the situation that's going on right now, we have a pandemic that's taking place all over the world, and yet the Gazans don't have access to medical care. The facility is very limited, of course, because it's being controlled. No medicine or very little medicine. As our other guests just talked about, the lack of clean water. Doesn't Israel have a responsibility as the occupying entity in this to make sure that the basic necessities are provided?
Well, I think that we should look at the number of trucks crossing from Israel into Gaza, carrying the supplies that are necessary. Should there be a free market? I, for one, say yes. However, I am only a journalist, and we are only commentators as we speak. But could the leadership, the so-called leadership, Hamas in Gaza, make a better resolution available for the people, its own people, who live in the Gaza Strip? Absolutely it could. Perhaps not building tunnels with available concrete would help. Perhaps building a hospital or a school would help, rather than building underground attack tunnels. That's a responsibility of Hamas, not of Israel and not of Egypt. Both countries are causing the access to supplies to be restricted, but
yes, everything from cement to basic supplies, even to build, as you're talking about building those hospitals that many times have been bombarded again by Tel Aviv. Now, Mick, we look at the situation that is going on. When we hear, like in the mainstream media, when they talk about this situation, for example, as Maxine started in the program, saying that it's Israel that is retaliating, it's always started off that in Gaza rockets were fired and Israel retaliated, as if these two entities are equal, when we have one of the most sophisticated and well-equipped, thanks to U.S. tax dollars, Air Force, as far as the Israelis, and bombarding this very populated, densely populated area. I want to talk about that aspect of how the mainstream media follows this line to actually, perhaps some would say, embolden Tel Aviv to do what they do.
Let me make a note to you about that densely populated area.
I'll come back to you, Maxine. And let me get, if this is for Mick, and I'll get your comments too.
Well, near where I'm speaking to you from, there is a prestigious Glasgow University media group, and they have conducted peer-reviewed academic studies, which are really unimpeachable, which show how the UK media, BBC, private TV channels, and so on, skew coverage of events in Israel to present Israel in the most favourable light. And always show Palestinians in the most generally show Palestinians in the most unfavorable light. Even the choice of vocabulary. I mean, Israel always retaliates. Palestinians never retaliate. They always inflict violence on innocent Jews because of some dark race condition that they suffer from. It really is quite consistent. The vocabulary is that Jews live in communities, whereas Palestinians live in areas, as do zebras and wildebeest and lions, if you're covering natural history, right down to those examples. Look, very few people even know that the fact that Maxine wants to cover up, but very few people are aware that the majority of the people of Gaza are refugees from an earlier wave or several earlier waves of ethnic cleansing, 48, 67, and so on. Now, that fact is hidden. So therefore, when Palestinians fire rockets across the ceasefire line, they're firing rockets into their own villages to which they are prevented from returning. If I were a Palestinian, I might not vote for Hamas. But look, they were elected. They were elected in free democratic elections observed by observers from Scotland and many, many other countries in the world. And anybody subjected to what Israel has done to their mothers and grandmothers would resist. It's a just struggle of the Palestinians. And Israel is not conducting a just struggle. It is conducting and trying to finalise a programme of ethnic cleansing about which they have been quite open. From Herzl onwards, the Zionist project has been to spirit the penniless population over the border, quote unquote, drive them into penury, drive them into poverty, hope that they will leave. And you know, in science, a single theory that explains a lot is very valuable. You can explain all Israeli behavior by a simple theory. They wish to take over all of Palestine with the minimum number of Palestinians. If you use that framework, everything clicks into place.
Okay. Maxine, you wanted to make a comment. Go ahead.
I want to make the point that the area into which this last rocket was fired is a residential area less than 10 miles from the Green Line, less than 10 miles from Gaza, and it is an area populated by civilians. It is a area of commerce and an area of residence, and it is not a military target at all. The differential should be strongly noted that the retaliation was strictly against military targets, against a munitions factory, against underground installations in the that area where the Israeli retaliation was strictly military.
Well, Maxine, what do you make? I want you to comment on what Mick said, and when he talked about that the majority of these people, they are of course our descendants now, of refugees. And for example, a Jewish person born in New York, born in Brussels, born in Paris, actually have more right then to go to Israel and live over there in that land, in land that actually belonged to these same people, many of these same people who are in the Gaza Strip. I mean, so tell me your perspective about that.
If you take a look at the current population of Israel, it is about 21% Arab Israelis. It is about 21% of the total population. It's the people and their descendants who in 1948 recognized that the State of Israel was a place they would prefer to be than on the run because of the direction of the Mufti of Jerusalem and the promise
that the Jewish population would be thrown
into the sea and would bleed into the sea. Those people in Israel are in every position: medicine, university, taxi driver, lawyer and clerk, any normal position that any other resident of Israel, Druze, Israeli, Christian, might take.
Okay.
And being paid according to those.
All right, let me get, I'm almost out of time. Mick, Mick, final comments, go ahead.
It would be nice if Maxine would respond to your question. Mm-mm. Not about those who were trapped inside Israel in 48, but those who were driven out. And this nonsense about they left because the Mufti told them to go, this has been researched academically. It's absolute nonsense. It's a Zionist. And even if they did, refugees who leave a war zone are behaving intelligently, but they have a right to return when the war is over. Don't talk about why they left. Leave that to one side. It's a lie, but leave it to one side. They have a right to return. Why not, Maxine?
And on that note, I appreciate both of you being with me, but we are out of time. Maxine Dover, journalist and commentator out of New York. Mick Napier, Scottish, from the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign out of Edinburgh. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
For the first time, President Donald Trump has admitted that coronavirus is running wild across the United States, in contrast with his statements throughout the election campaign that the country was rounding the turn on the pandemic. As new COVID infections in the United States approached 200,000 a day, Donald Trump took to Twitter on Saturday night, 21st of November, to insist things were bad outside the United States as well. The fake news is not talking about the fact that COVID is running wild all over the world, not just in the US. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at British newspaper The Guardian. The piece is titled, Donald Trump Appears to Admit COVID is Running Wild in the US. Stay with us for more. For the first time, President Donald Trump has admitted that coronavirus is running wild across the United States, in contrast with his statements throughout the election campaign that the country was rounding the turn on the pandemic. As new COVID infections in the U.S. approached 200,000 a day, Donald Trump took to Twitter on Saturday night, 21st of November, to insist things were bad outside the United States as well. The fake news is not talking about the fact that COVID is running wild all over the world, not just in the US. I was at the virtual G20 meeting early this morning, and the biggest subject was COVID. We will be healing fast, especially with our vaccines. That was Donald Trump's tweet on Saturday night, 21st of November. On Friday, the U.S. recorded 195,500 new cases of coronavirus, a global and U.S. record, according to Johns Hopkins University data. On Saturday, the country passed 12 million cases, by far the largest total in the world. During the election campaign, Trump repeatedly asserted that the United States was rounding the turn on coronavirus and that the country would hear less about the pandemic after 4th of November. In his tweets late on Saturday night, 21st of November, he insisted the fake news forgets to mention that far fewer people are dying when they get COVID. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, meanwhile, said on Saturday that it had issued an emergency use authorization for the Regeneron Pharmaceuticals antibody therapy that was given to President Trump when he had COVID-19 in October. It comes as daily deaths in the United States were approaching the figures seen during the first months of the pandemic. On Thursday, more than 2,000 Americans died from COVID-19, the highest figure since May. President Trump said at the virtual G20 summit early on Saturday that the biggest subject was COVID. We will be healing fast, especially with our vaccines. Trump also implied to the G20 leaders that he would be working with them in the future. I look forward to working with you again for a long time, Donald Trump told world leaders at the virtual G20 summit. Ahead of the summit, the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres called on G20 to join COVAX, an international initiative to distribute COVID-19 vaccines to countries worldwide. The United States has so far declined to join under the Trump administration. Instead, the US and other countries like Britain, France, and Germany, which are all G20 nations, have directly negotiated deals with pharmaceutical companies to receive billions of doses of the vaccine, meaning that the vast majority of the world's vaccine supply next year is already reserved. The pharmaceutical giant Moderna told the German weekly Welmtel Sonntag that it will charge governments between $25 and $37 per dose of its COVID vaccine candidate, depending on the amount ordered. Our vaccine therefore costs about the same as a flu shot, which is between $10 and $50. The chief executive of Moderna, Stefan Bansell, was quoted as saying, "Back in the US, millions were expected to travel for the upcoming Thanksgiving holiday on Thursday, ignoring warnings about spread of the coronavirus. More than a million people flew through airports on Friday, according to data from the Transportation Security Administration, TSA. It was the second heaviest domestic air traffic day in the United States since the start of the pandemic." The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, issued a warning on Saturday, 21st of November, for all people to avoid cruise ship travel because the risk of COVID-19 on board is very high. Last month, the agency issued a framework for a phased resumption of cruise ship operations after a no-sail order issued in March in response to the coronavirus pandemic was to expire. Of the 50 states in the United States, all but one, isolated Hawaii, is currently seeing alarming surges in new cases of the coronavirus. The virus is on the rise so uniformly across the landmass of the United States that records are being shattered almost daily. Almost 12 million cases have been recorded. In just one day, the U.S. notched up 184,000 new cases. Almost 80,000 Americans are currently in hospital fighting for their lives, and the death rate is soaring inexorably towards 2,000 a day, close to the peak it reached back in April. This week, the country passed the grimmest landmark so far, 250,000 dead Americans. And already the total has gone up significantly beyond this tragic milestone. As Michael Osterholm, a member of the coronavirus advisory team assembled by President-elect Joe Biden, put it, "We are in the most dangerous public health period since 1918. Governors and mayors from coast to coast have been scrambling to batten down the hatches, from New York City, where the country's largest public school system was closed on Thursday, barely 2 months after it reopened, to California, where Governor Gavin Newsom announced he was pulling the emergency brake. In America's heartland, President Donald Trump's historic mishandling of the pandemic is coming home to roost. Across the Midwest, many Republican governors have taken their cue straight from President Trump, consistently downplaying the seriousness of the coronavirus pandemic. Governors such as Chrissy Noem of South Dakota, Pete Ricketts of Nebraska, Kim Reynolds of Iowa, and Mike Parson of Missouri. They have downplayed the seriousness of the pandemic. They lied about the pandemic being under control, and at best, they have been ambivalent about wearing face masks. The results are now plain to see. Runaway coronavirus infection levels in the Midwestern United States, and hospitals at breaking point."
Good morning. Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.